Sharp and XAML. This is module 6. We'll be talking about navigation strategies inside Windows 8 applications. Welcome back, Darren.
Welcome back, Jerry.
Did you get a drink?
I did. Did you?
I did indeed. I'm very ready.
Are you ready to remind people that the code is available in XAML?
That's right. All of this stuff that we're doing is built into a solution with all the demos. You can download them yourself. They're at XAML, X-A-M-L. I guess we just assumed it.
Indeed.
XAML.codeplex.com, and the link will be super obvious. If it's not obvious, then
oh dear,
how ask sad. Your friends.
Never mind.
It's gigantic. All right, great. Okay, seriously though, navigation inside a Windows 8 app, we're going to be talking about what?
Understanding navigation. Really, what are the concepts? How do we do it? Where do we go? Data hierarchy.
Mm. Yeah, it's special in Windows 8.
Yep. And the described vocabulary to allow you to navigate a certain number of tiers of nesting.
Yeah.
Top app bar. That's pretty key.
It is, especially when we talk about navigation.
Yep. I think that's why we included it.
I think so, too.
And semantic zoom. What is navigation and what isn't?
Ah, very good. Yeah. Nice. It's like a mystery. Wait and see. We left it at the end because
exactly.
It's where it's, you know, the most compelling.
Or where we may run out of time and drop it.
Nice. All right.
And browser-like navigation.
Navigation inside Windows 8 is like navigation inside a web browser.
It is. And it's a well-established paradigm that was used in Silverlight and was then adopted certainly in WPF for the page type navigation.
That's right.
And it's actually been around for quite a long time as part of the inductive application model.
Yeah, I think it was Silverlight 2 where we got the navigation framework to come in. And certainly a handy way of interacting with different pages. Interesting when it comes to the concept of caching and things like that. We'll cover all of that. But if you keep in your mind the metaphor is a browser, then I think you're with us.
Yeah, you can go forward and you can go back.
Yeah. You really can. And even skip around.
Indeed.
Maybe that's special.
No, no. That's another song.
All right. Handled by, let's look at the controls. The first is the navigation frame. And so the frame is the outermost container that holds all the pages. I think it's worth saying that the frame is just a control. That means you can put it wherever you want. If you want to have it be the outermost container, you need it to be nested inside something else, that's up to you and your application. Probably the most common is for it to be the outermost control. Inside that, then, is the page. The frame itself has a few methods that are pretty handy. The first and probably absolutely most interesting is navigate.
It would be hard to use it without it.
The navigation framework fails without that method, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
And so I can navigate to a URL? No. I can't navigate to a URL. It's an interesting implementation.
It is very interesting, and there's a little bit of culture shock, I think, if you've come across from the Silverlight world, where you're used to constructing these URIs, and you're used to creating query strings, you know, which was obviously relevant to Silverlight because it was being hosted inside the browser and facilitated deep linking. So why would you have a different paradigm? But we're actually no longer inside the browser, so we shouldn't be constrained by just using strings and URIs and so on.
Yeah, you're right. And so there we are. So navigate has two. It's an override, so you have two potential parameters that you can fill there. The first one would be the type, because you can find it in any of the assemblies that you reference.
And so that's a type of what?
That is a type of, in this case, page.
Yes.
Right. Why would they didn't constrain it? I don't know, but it doesn't matter.
Well, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Gives you the ultimate flexibility, because your frame, I guess, you could just navigate directly to a user control or other framework element.
That inherits from page.
No, page inherits from user control.
Yeah,
that's true.
Anyway, mind-blowing, right? All right, nonetheless, in order to navigate from one page to another, you call the frame, call the navigate method off of the frame, pass in the type and or pass in an object that follows after it. That would be the parameter to the page, the query string, if you will, that goes to the page. And because it's object, I literally can pass anything. If I am navigating from a list of items and I'm navigating to the details page, I could pass the actual item that I want to show in the detail.
However, there's an interesting thing that comes up, and we touched upon it earlier with regards to state management and moving backwards between your states. Your navigation history is one of those things that gets stored, as we mentioned before. So do the parameters associated with that navigation. So if you place in there something that can't be serialized, it's not going to be serialized when you hit save state in your suspension manager.
As a result, MSDN explicitly recommends only using base types as arguments to a page. That means whenever you say navigate type, comma, the next thing to follow had better be one of the system types.
Yep. Such as.
And I must say, that is very unexpected, right? Most developers think, oh, it's an object, I'll pass anything.
Yeah. And I think as we discussed before, there are some good reasons for that. You know, you don't want to serialize War and Peace and pass it across as your object.
Right.
You know, because obviously saving that and bringing that back, it's substantial. Mm. Wherever possible, you want to be serializing key information that allows you to go out and retrieve these records and bring them back. So it does make sense. It just, we have to accept the fact that although it says object, it doesn't mean anything.
We have to talk about just a little bit the built-in templates in Visual Studio. The built-in templates in Visual Studio are a really good resource for developers to be able to see how things are done, grouped grids and handling different types of data. But at the same time, there are a few things in there that developers should not emulate.
Mm-hmm.
Right? One is, without a doubt, the untyped view model. But this is the next one. It regularly passes full types from one page to another in order to show them. And that is not a best practice. The best practice is a base type.
Yep.
Yeah, I think we've killed the horse. Let's go.
That's it.
All right, so of course, because it's a frame and it's a navigation, just like a browser, I would be able to go forward and be able to go back. So it has the methods to do that, as well as the test methods, makes sure that I am able to go forward and go back. And then it has that clever get navigation state and set navigation state that return the serialized version of the navigation and the context of where in that navigation back stack you are.
Yeah, that's pretty clever.
It is pretty clever and very handy as well. Usually that's invisible to us.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly what the suspension manager class that we talked about a few modules back.
Yep.
That's how it does it. Calls the frame.set get navigation state, gets back that string, saves it to a file, then the application is resumed.
Absolutely.
Reads from the file, sets it to the frame, and the user is returned to that exact spot.
One of the key things to understand as well is a lot of this stuff is given to you as part of the framework, but just because it's there, such as Suspension Manager and the Layout Page Manager, you don't have to use those. As Jerry demonstrated beforehand, you can roll your own suspension strategies and so on and so forth. So if you find for whatever reason that the state management serializing your navigation frame is not enough for you, say you need to be able to store out some other information regarding view models and so on and so forth,
yeah. You
have other plenty of abilities to either extend the implementation that's there, that's why the source is included in the project, or to actually roll your own.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are just wrappers to make it easy. They could just be a source of learning.
Yes.
And nothing else. Of course, then we also have the frame. The frame has a reference back to the page, as well as two handy events. I guess these are actually override methods. On navigated to and on navigated from, and those are things that you can do to load your state or to save your state as you're navigating around.
Exactly, and you know they could also be used for many other things within the context of the life cycle of the page. In that you also have on navigating from, which allows you to prepare some information and perhaps mm-hmm. suspend navigation.
Let me ask you a question. I am navigating from page one to page two,
mm-hmm.
and then I navigate back to page one. Am I returning to a cached copy of page one, or am I returning to a new copy, a newly instantiated version of
page one? Depends if you've declared any specific intent for that.
All right. Let's see. How do you do that?
Oh, navigation cache mode.
Okay.
That's awesome.
Awesome. Navigation cache mode is a property of the page, and you must set it if you don't want the default.
Yes.
The default is disabled, which means every time you go to a page, that example I gave, going from page one to page two back to page one, back to page one reinstantiates it, which means reruns the constructor, which means reloads the data if that's what you have, which means all the stuff that happens in order to generate that UI happens.
Exactly, which obviously could result in some delay in presenting that information, which is why we have cache mode.
It could also result in a little bit of disappointment for the developer, right? They go from page one to page two back to page one. The value that they typed in the text box or whatever mm-hmm. is gone, right? Because you just reinstate, it's not even the same thing, it just called the same thing.
This is one of the interesting things as well, is in terms of the default implementation is very, very page-centric. But if you had a view model and that view model was persisted across the life cycles of the page, and you were using binding, then although you have a new page, it's bound to the view model that you had previously, and that would reflect the values that you'd entered in before.
If you've implemented a singleton view model, regardless of how the page is or isn't instantiated, the view model makes sure that this cache is done for you. Certainly, not using a view model introduces a lot of pain and solves a lot of problems as well. Cache mode in particular, though, you know, you may have the need for it, and I believe sometimes you do.
Yeah.
It's interesting that the default is disabled. That certainly allows for the memory footprint of the app not to grow and grow and grow.
Yep.
It just nukes the old pages, and so because it knows it's going to reinstantiate.
That's the technical term.
But I could go from disabled to enabled.
Yep.
And enabled basically says keep it in cache.
Keep it in cache. Keep it as long as you need, unless...
Yeah, it's kind of a friendly enable, that if my memory footprint is getting to be too large, the cache size is exceeded, then it'll discard that and it will reinstantiate it. And in that case, you just get what you get because you're taking up too much memory anyway.
Yeah, and so that tells you that if you're using enabled, then you've got to employ a strategy that says, I may need to go out and reconstruct my state.
Yeah. Now, sometimes you might have a scenario where you must reuse that page. I mean, do not lose the data that the user just typed in. It is super important. And so you can flag that not as enabled, but instead as required.
Yes.
And required says regardless of the cache size, hold it. Now, if that cache size is exceeded, if your memory footprint becomes too large, the operating system still may terminate your application.
Exactly.
You can't stop that.
Which is unfortunate.
Yeah. But it does at least give you an option if you need to mark something as absolutely not reinstantiated.
Perfect.
That is navigation cache mode.
Have you cached that?
Good to know. Yeah, no doubt about it. Okay.
Data
now
hierarchy.
Around the design of your data. So let's not talk about games for a moment. Let's just talk about content-related applications. You build an application. You want to show your application. We talked about the design guidelines where content is king, where you remove the Chrome, on and on. Now, how is your data actually laid out? You think to yourself, well, inside my company, data is like this. And you know that somebody else inside their company, data is like that. Inside a Windows 8 application, there still is a recommendation of how data should be laid out. Mm-hmm. That means regardless of how your application or how your data is from your company, you should attempt to restructure it to fit into a common data model or a common data, not model, but common data hierarchy. And it basically goes like this. It goes from, and your application can see it, it goes from the hub down to the section, down to the detail. And this three-tier model may or may not work with your data, but odds are it can. Odds are you can take your data, massage it slightly, and get the same result. And the reason is, it kind of goes back to this win is one and the similarity between all the different applications. It allows for your application not only to somewhat look like all the other applications in the ecosystem, but also interact and even feel like it as you're navigating through the through your data. So, very important, the hub. And so let's go to the next section, the next slide for a second. The hub is without a doubt the most important part of your application. And an app that doesn't have a hub, I don't even understand, especially not in Windows 8. An app hub allows you to, at a glance, see at the highest level all of the data that you're about to represent. Now, think about like the Netflix app, right? That's a nice application. Mm-hmm. The hub is not going to show all of the movies. You certainly could not do that. But what it can do is it can show you the top 10, the top 4, the top 12, maybe the top in your recommended queue, the top in your watch instantly, the top in something else, in different genres or whatever. That's the hub. The hub allows you to have an overview of the data. It allows, gives you points to drill into your data, and it also bubbles up things of interest. Often inside a line of business application, the hardest thing to do is sort your data, because you can always sort your invoices by date, you can always sort your invoices by customer name, but you want to really sort your invoices by what is most relevant to the current user, and that's a new column that a lot of developers just do not have access to. It's usually something that is unique to every user, and it's often something that has to be calculated quite frequently in order for it to be up to date. So it may reflect whether or not some activity needs to be done in a workflow or whatever. But sorting your data ends up being one of the most powerful and important things. So let's say inside my app hub, I have sorted my data by what's most relevant to me. And I only want to take the top 12 anyway, because I want to show that in one section of my app hub. Now, the next one, I might have a group that says, most out of date, right? And I'll show the top 10 as well. And so I can keep going like that. Our research has shown that the wider your app hub, the more of a positive experience it is for your user. So even though you could fit everything on a single page, try not to. Start thinking about how you can pivot the data and show it in different and unique ways so that the user can explore it using your App Hub to do it. It's pretty valuable. The App Hub itself then allows you to drill down into the individual ones. So I'm looking at invoices and I can see the top 10 that are relevant to me. That may not be enough. Maybe the 11th one is what I'm looking for. I've already implemented search and all of these pieces as well, but I want to just drill in so I can see the next top 10 and keep going from there. That allows me to tap on the header and go to the second tier of our data hierarchy. So the first is hub, the second is section. And section allows me to look at all of the data. Yeah, perfect. And looking at all the data means different things. All the data, if you have a database full of 35,000 records, all the data is really not something that you want to show the user. But it might be the access point that you want to show all the users, show all the data to the user. So for example, maybe I can scroll and you virtualize some of the data so that I can scroll and keep scrolling and you load the data in small pages. But at the same time, it might just be the place where I see the top 100 with some sort of link or access to go to a different type of tool or a different page altogether to see lots and lots more data. Odds are you're not going to bind to 100,000 records. Darren, if you bind to 100,000 records, the performance of your app rendering is going to be negative.
It's going to be poor. Yeah. You can obviously employ things like the virtualizing controls to reduce some of the impacts of those things. But yes, in general, we don't want to be dealing with that large amount of that data.
Yeah. So there is a place where you don't show everything, but at the same time, you do want to give the user some way to get to everything they need for the workflow of your app. So we start with the App Hub, then we go to the details, and then from the details, then we go to the details. That's the page dedicated to an individual record. We would use that individual record then to show as much as we can for that individual record, what's relevant, and maybe even a way to drill in and expand to more. So those are the three steps. We go from the hub to the section to the detail. And you can, of course, jump directly from the hub to a detail, no problem with that. And from the hub to a section, from the detail to the section, you can go any way you want. But those are the three levels that you want to implement so that it feels like a native application. This is the way we build our apps, and this is the way we recommend you build yours.
Because fundamentally, you know, you said win together. It's all about getting that consistent user experience so that people aren't having to learn how to use your apps.
Yeah, absolutely. That's right. That's the whole idea. Winning is one is because we spend all the time and money getting users familiar with how to interact with applications. Right. Okay, so there is one other possible design that you have, and maybe it is that you're showing data that there is no hierarchy. That's not unreasonable. You're showing who knows what, a list of states or whatever, and you don't want to show them in any other way than just a flat design. Perfect. That is whatever your app is. And you as the developer or the designer get to choose what these two designs you pick from, hierarchical or flat. Flat would use the top app bar, and the top app bar is the way that you toggle between different views of the same data. Sort of like in a pivot table, you could pivot between different views of the same data, looking at them a different way, but fundamentally underneath, it's the same data over and over.
Mm-hmm. Or you can use that top app bar to navigate between documents. So say, for example, you know, you've got a multiple document interface, to use the old terms.
Yeah.
You know, you've got multiple Word documents or multiple PDFs open, then you could use that to navigate between those PDF documents.
Right. It's not a hierarchical navigation. It's a side-to-side lateral navigation. And so the top nav bar is perfect for that. It's also the way the browser works as you go from tab to tab. So if you need a somewhat tabbed sort of interface, this is the way to implement it with the top app bar. Good.
Pretty easy.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
I mean, the other key thing, I guess, is there's once you're in there, there's not really any idea of moving back in your navigation stack. You're really just changing the view on the current page.
Yeah, exactly. If you have four views of your data and you navigate to the third view, what does back even mean?
Yes.
Second view, why would that be? Maybe it's not even relevant. So
yeah.
That's right. You wouldn't have a back view, back button. You would just have the ability to navigate to the other views.
Cool.
Well done. Okay, so if I do have a lot of data, we talked about this before, but now we're going to talk about it a little bit more detail. So we have semantic zoom. I'll go back to my start menu just to remind you. The semantic zoom allows me to back away from a large list. And so if I'm looking at this is a large list, let's say A, B, and C, they don't fit on a single screen. So instead it allows me to, I can do control roll or I can do control minus sign. I can pinch with my fingers if I want to. And allows me literally, not literally, I take that back. it allows me to
virtually
step back from my data. Thank you. Yeah. I can virtually step back away from my data, see it at a 50,000 foot view instead.
Stepping away from your screen will not initiate the semantic zoom interface.
No, that's the touch gesture that doesn't work. I keep pulling back and it doesn't do anything.
But with the Kinect, you could.
Oh, yeah. Wouldn't that be sweet?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about some ideas around the semantic zoom. So you might have a list, let's say, of messages. And here you can see, you can take messages and you can pinch zoom or do whatever it is that you want. Danny. And pinch Danny. And you can pinch zoom Danny. There you go.
Barry, hit Danny.
Barry, hit Danny. And messages. Yeah, that's nice. I'll teach him. All right. Man, I feel sorry for Danny all of a sudden.
I don't.
All right. Let's pretend that you're looking at all the messages and you pinch zoom. What could you show? You could group them by whatever is related to the data. In this case, messages is grouped by the date, right? And so it shows you today, yesterday, last week, and going on from there. And inside that, it shows you how many are available. If you go to the right, the science fiction books is pretty cool, too. I might pinch that down and visually sort of represent, in kind of a bar chart way, how many books are inside each of the categories that you look at. That's really cool. Mutual funds might do the same thing, or only instead of changing their size, I could alter their hue to show whether or not they're, I don't know, reflecting a positive or negative change over a certain period of time. And then produce is another one, again, where I could represent how many items are inside those individual groups. Really, it's up to the developer and the designer to come up with the simplest or the coolest way of using semantic zoom. I think the only thing to remember is semantic zoom is a transition between two different views, and those views are expected to be rendered inside of a grid view control. So it's two grid view controls inside the semantic zoom control.
But as you mentioned, we have the full power of all the templating that we discussed before in terms of being really flexible with your presentation here, which is cool.
Yeah, you can still do absolutely anything you can dream up.
Yep.
And probably in the zoomed out version of a semantic zoom is where, from a design point of view, you can go as crazy as you want.
You can be very, very creative. Whatever paradigm really illustrates what it is that you're trying to communicate, that's what you can do.
Yeah. I mean, it really is a new view of the same data to that point. And when I select one of the individual, say, mutual funds, it would take me to that location in the grid and automatically scroll. Semantic Zoom does that for us automatically. What it isn't, though, Darren, is navigation so much, right?
No,
I'm not moving to a new page.
You don't hit your back button to go to navigate back from your semantic zoom.
Right, right. That's exactly right. It just allows me to manage large sets of data in an easier way.
Yep.
Semantic zoom is something interesting to think about when you're talking about virtualization. That's one of the things that can spoil virtualization is using semantic zoom as well, because you'll need to access the other data. Okay, so that's the semantic zoom, a great way to interact with data. Not necessarily navigation. That's what we were kind of waiting for here at the end. Other techniques you might use in order to interact with the data that you're showing and kind of drive easier navigation inside your application is in larger grids. One of the things you'll want to do is at least allow the user to apply a filter, right? That might be important to say only invoices that aren't reconciled, only invoices that are overdue, something like that. As well, we talked about pivoting. That's the ability to switch between different views. Sorting is going to be endlessly important. And this is kind of a new driver here inside Windows 8, the ability to sort based on relevance. And relevance is going to be unique to every data set, right? You get to decide what
you
relevant
need to
really
consider
means.
That.
And more often than not, relevance is going to be unique per user. And then we also have the ability to change the view, change the style of the content so that it is easier for users to visually navigate your application as well. Okay, boy, that's quite a demo. The good news is grid view, we already showed off grid view, right?
Yep.
And the ability to group and the ability to do semantic zoom. And but let me do pull up the demo that we have. Again, our demos are on xaml.codeplex.com. And I always think of .com. Remember that with Yahoo? Yeah. Are they still in business?
No, that was Yahoo.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, that was Yahoo.
Yahoo? Yeah. That can't be right.
No.
let's see. Oh, I closed it while over lunch here. Let me open it back up. All right, so this is the navigation. So navigation is fun to see, and let me go ahead and make this the startup project. And first, let me just show you some things. This, let's see, can I do this? Yes, excellent. Except for that part. There we go. All right. So you can see that inside here we have three views, right? And so views are just going to be pages in this case. And so we have four views. I said three, but I meant four. We have child, grandchild, parent, and grandparent. Let me read it in reverse. So we have grandparent and parent, child and grandchild. That's the natural order. And the app will allow you to navigate between those pages. And it'll also show us the backstack. So we can see as we do navigation what the backstack looks like, right? So I'll go ahead and run this demo. There we are. And so I started it in the grandparent. That's where the default navigation starts me on the first page. You can see I can go to the different ones here at the top. And here it shows me where I am in the backstack. There's only one item in the backstack. That's because I started on the first page. And it's the current because that's where I am.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So now I'm going to navigate to parent. And you can see parent now is current because that's where I am. And back one, negative one, is how I get to grandparent. Now if I go to child, child now is current, back one to parent, back two to grandparent. And then I can do the same thing going to grandchild, back one to child then, right? And you can see, and I'll just keep on going, bam, 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 right? There we are. Now, this is the full backstack. If I were about to be suspended and then terminated, and I wanted to give the user a consistent experience as they relaunch and reactivate my application, I want to make sure that this backstack is preserved and this backstack is given back to the user. So not only do I bring them back into grandchild, but I also allow them to click the back button and go to child, right? Click the back button and go to parent. Click the back button and go to grandparent. That's a full fidelity experience when the mm-hmm. user comes back in and is restored. Now, in order to accomplish that, we use the get navigation state and set navigation state of the frame. And certainly we would attach to the suspending on the app control. But let me just show you a couple other things. I'm going back and forward, right? This is me going back and forward. You can see the back stack is adjusting the way it should. And but now that I'm in the middle here, I see I'm a grandparent right here. If I were to now go to child, child would become the next here. Let me just show you. Child. Now what happened here is everything that was in the forward portion of the back stack was erased and child was made current. Right, because now there's nowhere to go that's forward because I've changed the direction of the tree and I've gone to a new location. And so I could still, the back stack going behind me is still the same, but I can't go forward anywhere because I've actually changed. It's kind of like the timeline.
You've changed your future.
Once you change it, the old timeline is forever erased. Wow.
I'm getting lost, it's dark, Captain.
That is awesome. What a Star Trek reference. All right, beautiful. Brilliant. All right. But let me show you something. So I have a few others here. So I'll make it a nice long back stack like this. See, it works just fine. Now I'm going to suspend this and restart it and show you something pretty cool. So here I am. Somebody asked earlier, how did I get this command bar right here? This is where the suspend is. Remember, I right click on the command bars here and I select debug location. Right? Without it, it's not there. Now I add debug location. Now it is there. And I can drop down here, say suspend and shut down. It does. The application's not running anymore. Now if I run it again, as you can see,
what have you done?
What? Wait, let me just see if it was a crazy fluke. Of course it was. Right? Because now when I run it again, isn't that funny? Okay, so the reason that happened, I have no idea.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it
wasn't
attached.
I really don't know. What was?
Maybe you didn't attach it to the debugger. It wasn't debugging.
I thought I said suspend and I don't know.
Yeah.
If that didn't work, I would have restarted.
Yes.
That covers many sins.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it is important to say that this is the same backstack, and you can see the forward backstack is gone, right? And that is not preserved, only the backstack. The back part of the backstack is preserved, right? It's crazy.
And the back part of the history.
Yeah, but it's called backstack.
Yeah, I know.
We'll call it history. It's fine. And right, and then I can still navigate through it. And this is really important. So now the user, They didn't know your application was terminated. You did, but you did the correct suspension. They come back into it. They can go back like they would expect to, right?
Because, again, the suspension could only be lasting a couple of seconds. And so from their perspective, you know, why should it be a new experience?
That's right. Even if it lasted half an hour and your operating system decided to terminate you for whatever,
yep.
They still think that, right? They still are coming in. They're like, oh, here's where I left off. And if you don't, they think something like, I didn't close this. Why, you know, all I'm going to do is lose data in this application.
Yeah. But say tomorrow, they might not expect that.
Right. They may be a little more reasonable. Thinking that IT rebooted their machine overnight.
Yeah.
And something like that.
So you can deal with that in a different way.
That's right. Because then some amount of time has elapsed, which you could decide what the threshold is to actually restart it. Yeah. So let's look at how the suspension manager actually handles it. I'm going to go to... I'm going to go to the app XAML here and show you the code behind. It's really simple, and I know that's an oversimplification, but it really is quite straightforward. I'll just say it that way. So on launched fires no matter what, right? You get that. That establishes the initial frame. Remember, we have the initial the frame that's the outer container for everything. And then we do its initial navigation to the first page. In this case, we're going to main page. And so the two core things are, first, establishing the frame and then navigating to it. Of course, if there is no frame, which is possible, right, then we create a new one. And oh, I see.
You need activate.
It's the wrong one.
Yes.
It's the wrong frame because I've got a subframe.
Ah.
Okay.
There you go.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. And then here's where I can set the content to the frame itself and then do the navigation. I have a frame inside the main page. That's the one I need to look at. Let me show you. Hopefully the code is a little simpler as well. So the first is when the main page is loaded. I do the initial navigation. And let's see. Main page loaded is right here. So the first piece, remember, there are only three methods inside the suspension manager that really matter to us. They're all static. The first one is register frame. It allows me to say which frame I care about, give it a name so I can reference it from a dictionary later if I need to. And it also allows suspension manager to handle more than one frame if you need to. I don't in this example, right? So here I am just loading. So the first thing I do is attempt to restore. If it doesn't restore, fine. That means I'm just starting from scratch and it's blank. No big deal. And then I do the initial navigation. Right? That's perfect. That's how I restore the frame on launch after a suspension. Now, when it's suspending, here's the little code for this. When it's suspending, I need to call suspensionmanager.saveasync. I don't have to say again which frame it is because that's already been registered for me. Now I call saveasync. It's awaitable. And because it's an await operation inside the suspending method, I have to use a deferral. Otherwise, it'll return and won't give me time to do the actual saveasync. This is the full implementation of the suspension manager. Register your frame and call restore at the beginning, or call save async when we are suspending. That's the full implementation. All the other code in the page has to do with the little backstack magic that we're doing. Pretty simple implementation.
Pretty simple.
Include the suspension manager. Probably the best part of the suspension manager is that it's used by thousands and thousands of apps, and it's kind of a known quantity. And you know, isn't going to be full of problems. At the same time, it doesn't mean you can't enhance it.
Mm-hmm.
Not at all.
Absolutely.
Okay, perfect. That's navigation. Navigation has more to do with understanding your data. It has more to do with deciding how you can form your data to a more common pattern inside Windows 8. It also has to do with understanding the frame and the page, being able to understand the backstack, how to suspend it as well, or how to restore it as well. And interact with it by calling back, forward, or anything that you want along the lines. That's the core piece around navigation. It's a fundamental principle around Windows 8 to be able to interact with your app at all. You can, of course, deep link. We were talking earlier about protocol navigation, right, where you can pass a URL, allow that to go into a sub page if you want to. Of course, that's handled by you interpreting the URL, not by an actual URL navigation, because when we do the navigation, it's type navigation, not URL navigation.
Absolutely. So it's just information that gets passed in, and you have to break it down and understand it. The same way as you can also deep link in through secondary tiles and so on.
That's right. The secondary tile or perhaps Toast would also allow you to do that deep linking. Again, it's up to you to implement it. It's not automatically just going to link to a page.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, we moved through that one pretty quickly.
Bam. Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, navigation, I hope the takeaway is navigation is pretty simple, right?
Yeah.
Once you get your head wrapped around the core concepts, navigation is a simple implementation. You can simplify navigation with semantic zoom and things like that. But overall, once you understand a browser and how it works, you basically understand how navigation inside Windows 8 works.
Sounds good. Well, that's pretty much what we covered.
Yeah.
And so we'll give you guys a few minutes back. So we'll break for 10 minutes. And then we'll be back with implementing contracts.
That's right. See you in 10 minutes.